Previously on Coffee with Kenobi.
Can I ask, there's a part of this story arc that I was just dying to seesaw.
Oh, well done.
I really wanted to see, I can't get away from it, Saw.
This is James Arnold Taylor, and you're listening to Coffee with Kenobi. I have a good feeling about this.
Hello and welcome to show number 95 of Coffee with Kenobi, your spoiler-free place for Star Wars discussion, analysis, and rhetoric. I'm your host, Dan Z, back to enjoying coffee in my Star Wars Disney Cruise Line mug. Thanks to everybody for bearing with my laryngitis on show number 94 and for all the well wishes I received over the past week. It's time to sit back and have some Star Wars conversation. We hope to make you think about the mythology of Star Wars in a whole new way and maybe laugh a little bit in the process. On today's show, we'll talk about a potentially major change in the Star Wars canon and the manifestation of recent episodes of Forces of Destiny. We check in with one of today's co-hosts, Christian Blauvelt, about his book Star Wars Made Easy, A Beginner's Guide to a Galaxy Far, Far Away. CWK newsman Tom Gross will bring us the latest Star Wars news. And in the coffee chat, similar to show number 94, we have another two-parter, beginning with part two of my conversation with Mark Pavia. And for the second half, we will conclude our CWK book study on Leia, Princess of Alderaan, from chapters 29 to 32, and begin our second book study with chapters 1 through 4 of Phasma. So pull up a chair, grab your favorite coffee mug, and let's have some coffee with Kenobi.
And now, let's see what's brewing in the Star Wars universe this week.
If you are going to be in the Peoria, Illinois area on Friday, December 15th, which of course is the day for the premiere of Star Wars The Last Jedi, I'm going to be hosting an event known as the Star Wars Experience Dinner and a Movie, and I'll read the description from the website, which we'll have a link to in the show notes. Join us for a stellar night of Star Wars hosted by Coffee with Kenobi's Dan Zare. You'll experience a Star Wars-themed dinner, meet and greet with authentic Star Wars characters, and enjoy a presentation by Peter Wentworth Shields, retired Star Wars Assistant Art Director. Peter Wentworth Shields will share his experiences working on set designs for Star Wars Episode IV, A New Hope, where he helped design the Millennium Falcon cockpit, the Death Star's garbage compactor, and the kitchen interior on Tatooine. He also worked on A Clockwork Orange, Captain Nemo, and The Little Prince. You'll finish the evening with a screening of the latest film, Star Wars The Last Jedi, and there will be a link to show notes for that. I'm really, really excited and honored to be able to host that event. It's going to be an amazing night. That weekend is going to be incredible anyway, because The Last Jedi will premiere. And to be able to talk to someone who helped design the interior of the Millennium Falcon live on stage is going to be fantastic. So if you are in the area, I'd love to have you come out and love to shake your hand and talk with you and experience this incredible way to enjoy The Last Jedi for the very first time. Joining us today for a cup of coffee is the author of Star Wars Made Easy, A Beginner's Guide to a Galaxy Far, Far Away, Christian Blauvelt.
Hello, gentlemen. How are you?
Great. Thanks for coming on the show again. We were just talking. I can't believe we haven't been on together since May of 2014, so I'm glad we remedied that.
That is hard to believe. I know 3.5 years, but what a fun occasion to come on and talk about the book. I'm so glad. Have you guys picked up a copy of So Is Made Easy so far?
Oh, yeah.
I've picked up three, actually. One for the library here, and then one to donate to the library that my wife works at, and then one to give to a friend of mine at work who was not too familiar with Star Wars, but now we're rectifying that for her. Your book is really helping a lot.
Wow. Oh, that's perfect. Well, that's exactly what the book is for. It is an introductory guide for new Star Wars fans. You know, it's like Star Wars is such a massive part of our culture that, you know, if you haven't seen the films, or maybe you time, but you don't remember a lot about it, you know, you can really have a sense of like missing out. You can really have a fear of missing out. And I think this book, you know, is such a great way to get caught up to speed so you can, you know, feel like that you're part of the conversation. If you've never seen, you know, any of the Star Wars films, this kind of gives you a sense of what all the fuss is about and why we care about it so deeply.
That's awesome. And I'm definitely looking forward to kind of diving into that with you a little bit later. I would also like to introduce our other co-host, and you heard the dulcet tones of his voice a moment ago, Comics with Kenobi co-host and CWK's comic book superscribe, Matt Moore.
Hello, everybody.
Hello, hello.
I am happy to be on. I appreciate you making time for me.
Always, always. We were going to start the show talking about an Imperial feast, and we will definitely make time for that. But the Force was with us today, and the new spot for the Force Awakens premiered during Game 7 of the World Series. Sadly, no Cubs or Tampa Bay teams on the World Series, but that's okay. There's always wait till next year.
The Rays are going to take a while to get back to the World Series, I'm afraid.
Well, I hope that's not the same for Mike.
But Ray, even if the Rays are not on the World Series, Ray was, and this TV spot is amazing.
Exactly. It's great, isn't it?
Yeah.
And let's just get it out right now. Luke on the Falcon. Luke on the Falcon. Luke on the Falcon.
When he walked down the small hallway and you saw his hood, and I just had chills, and I thought, wow. This made it very real for me, even more so than seeing him in The Force Awakens.
Completely. It's like, oh my gosh, it's like old times. There he is. He's in the cockpit. He knows exactly how to turn the lights. And wow, what kind of adventure is in store for him? It's going to be so exciting. And, I mean, on top of that, then we got a little glimpse of what appears to be Snoke's throne room.
And look how
amazing.
Look how austere it looked. I mean, it was just his throne, a large platform, and what looked like 9 Praetorian guards, you know, sort of fanned out behind him against the wall.
It looked almost like a rejected set from the 80s Flash Gordon movie.
Oh, that's the only thing that make, the only thing that would make that scene better is if Brian Blessed walked onto the platform.
Or Ming the Merciless, of course. So, and the music was really bold, too. I'm assuming this is from the impending score with John Williams, hopefully.
We can only hope. Yeah. I would think it would be, though.
I would think. The trailer, the full trailer for The Force Awakens, it was co-written by John Williams, but he didn't conduct part of that score, I believe, just for the trailer.
Really?
Yeah. Who was telling me that? I think Bobby Roberts was telling me that.
Oh, well, Bobby would know.
Yeah, he would know for sure. But other than those two things we just mentioned, I didn't see anything else that appeared brand new. Maybe there's some shots of the Falcon that were new.
Well, that new, there was the obligatory gratuitous shot of the Porg on in the Falcon's cockpit. Although there was one really cool scene that I thought was new. It repeated what we'd seen in a previous trailer with the Falcon, soaring through the caverns of Crate, to my knowledge, and then it showed it bursting through the surface.
Yes,
which I thought was awesome. And then I did notice it looked like there was one new shot. We got a shot of Finn and one of the one of the Crate speeders.
Right. So they did give us a few snippets. I'm guessing though, probably this is not the last one we will see.
Well, no, but you know, think about how cool it is we can actually say this now. There's a new Star Wars movie next month.
I know. And that really hit me when we watched the Star Wars show today. They talking about how they're in the Last Jedi season, and that's pretty surreal.
It's a good position to be in.
That's so cool.
Because basically, pretty much from here on out, you know, at some point of every year, we're going to be in the season of Solo, the season of Episode 9, the season of an Obi-Wan Kenobi film, I hope. So,
right.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, I don't know what more we can say about that other than we really love
it. There's this great shot, too, of Rey, like, holding her lightsaber in the middle of a rainstorm. There's going to be some kind of showdown or something there, which is pretty cool. Yeah, I just love that it's like, you know, we're in the now. I mean, before we know it, I mean, it's just, what is it? It's just 6 weeks away until it comes out. It's incredible.
Wow. I know, it's nuts. Isn't it crazy? I am so stoked for this. It's like, oh my gosh, can I make it this far? Can I make it to December 14th?
A little over 3 weeks until Thanksgiving, and then we've got Star Wars and Christmas. It's going to be quite an exciting next few weeks, I would say.
Yeah, very bouncy.
I know the shot you're talking about too. It looked very almost aggressive, her holding the saber in that fashion.
Yeah. Pretty cool. And I love that shot. There's a new shot of Finn and one of the Crate speeders as well, which is pretty cool. It'll be interesting to see how those Crate speeders work, since it looks like the AT-6 walkers, you know, have those jagged legs in a way to prevent, it looks like, you know, tow cables being wrapped around them. how are they going to be attacked? Like, how are the crate speeders going to try to approach them and take them down? That's something they don't really know yet.
I guess I could open the toy. I have it in my office. I just haven't opened the box. I should open it and find out.
but then it won't be mitten box.
Well, that's true. I just like it work because it's easier to store. It looks pretty. So I want to talk about an Imperial Feast. This is one of the newer episodes of Forces of Destiny, the very popular animated show that's kind of exploded on the scene, really. It's brought in a whole different generation of fans. As I mentioned before, my four-year-old, this is his first foray into Star Wars, seeing Forces of Destiny, and he loves it. Now, this one was particularly intriguing for a couple of reasons, and before we kind of spot those off, I want to know what you two thought about an Imperial Feast and why that is really important to the Star Wars saga.
I thought it was so cute. I mean, all of these episodes of Forces of Destiny, I think, have just been adorable, you know, in the characterizations, in the landscapes, and the way they've shown the creatures. I mean, just the color palette in each one of these episodes is so beautiful and so much fun. And this one, wow, that we have a little bit of the aftermath of the Ewok celebration on Endor after the death of the Emperor and the destruction of the second Death Star. And we have this really funny thing that Han, initially he seems a little reluctant to intervene when the Ewoks want to include some of the stormtroopers they've captured as part of the feast. Literally, they actually want to just like cook and eat the stormtroopers. And so, of course, Leia's like, "No, you got to stop them. And why don't you go get some food for the Ewoks?" By talking to General Syndulla and getting some snacks from her. And so we got to see Han interact with Hera, which is amazing. And, really fun. I don't think we'd really expected this, it's to actually see, Han interact with, a character from Rebels in this way. I mean, that's a first.
What I really like about this show and this medium is the fact that it is so accessible. I mean, from, like you said, Dan, to your four-year-old, to people like me, who's 47. I find it just visually entertaining and it's very sumptuous. Each and every episode is a feast unto itself. And I love how Lucasfilm has taken, advantage of this to give us more content, but more importantly, really good and fun content. Is it all going to be high bar? No, and it shouldn't be. But to have it like this, it's a great way to, for lack of a better term, to sort of lure in new fans and get them while they're young and raise them up on Star Wars.
Right. Well said. It's like I'm talking to a couple of writers here. Something like that. Well, there are three things I think that are important about this. One, and probably the least important as far as I'm concerned, is we have more confirmation that the Ewoks, while they are have an interesting diet, they still are not cannibals because cannibals eat their own. Stormtroopers are not Ewoks. So
yes,
so we're good there. The other thing is the reveal, which to me really isn't much of a surprise at all, is the fact that Hera and Chopper are still around after the Battle of Endor. I sort of expected that after Rogue One because I just couldn't imagine they would make it that far and not go all the way. Hera just sort of is a force of nature unto herself. But to me, the smartest thing about this, and I think it's incredibly brilliant, is they have a way to settle the debate of who's a better pilot and which is a better ship, Hera and the Ghost or Solo and the Falcon. Mm-hmm. And they manage to say both of them are correct in a span of about a minute and 30 seconds. Thought that was absolute genius.
That was so much fun. I absolutely loved that. And yeah, it's so interesting. You're right. I mean, I think once we learned that Hera and Chopper were the Battle of Scarif and all, it's like there's no way they're going to not make it all the way at that point. But to actually have it confirmed is so satisfying. And it also just it lends more credence to the idea from Chuck Wendig's first Aftermath book, when Mon Mothma talks about like some design or some banner for the New Republic that had been created by, you know, an artist. And then like someone interrupts before we actually get the artist's name. And I think we all kind of assumed that it was Sabine, but it seems more likely now that maybe, oh, she probably made it too, you know? So it's pretty cool.
I hadn't thought about that connection. I'm sure it's not a coincidence.
Well, I do think that we're, you know, these characters are going to sort of go the distance. I mean, maybe not all of them, and not all of them should, you know, because this is Star Wars. There has to be a sacrifice made, right, you know, for the common good. But, you know, I don't think that we have reached the conclusion of the stories of some of those in Rebels. And yes, you know, we see Hera in Forces of Destiny, and, you know, Hera is actually, you know, she's going to be one of the five. She's going to be the focal point. You know, she's going to feature prominently in one of the issues of next year's Forces of Destiny five issue comics miniseries from IDW. But it would not surprise me in the next two or three years, you know, if we see some of these characters, be it Sabine or Hera or even Chopper, in some other sort of Star Wars properties as well, because, you know, they are enduring fan favorites. Now, that's not to say that, you know, they may not make it all the way. I mean, because, you know, we do know that, for example, you know, Shara Bey, Poe Dameron's mom, didn't make it. So, you know, outside of her appearance in the Shattered Empire miniseries. So, but who knows? I mean, I think Lucasfilm, you know, and Disney are very keenly aware of the popularity that Hera has, and Sabine too. So, I think we will see a lot more of them. Not, like I said, in a grand way, but, you know, they will be popping up from here and there time to time.
And one of my favorite aspects about all this, too, is that we don't know, and I love the not knowing, because you just never know where someone's going to pop up, which is why this was such a big thrill to see. So we will go ahead and take our first break, and up next, we're going to talk with Christian a little bit more about his new book, Star Wars Made Easy. This is Coffee with Kenobi.
This is Coffee with Kenobi. Oh, pass the cream, would you?
Coffee with Kenobi is sponsored by Penguin Random House Audio. Looking to catch up on the latest Star Wars books? Try listening to them on audio. Featuring sound effects and music directly from the movies, Star Wars audiobooks are the definitive listening experience. From brand new audiobooks such as Phasma and Battlefront 2 Inferno Squad to our blockbuster movie tie-in editions, you'll have plenty to keep you entertained. Visit penguinrandomhouseaudio.com/Star Wars for sample clips and to start listening now. Coffee with Kenobi is also sponsored by the Star Wars Digital Card Trader Collecting App from Topps. If you love Star Wars and love the excitement of chasing your favorite Star Wars collectibles, the Star Wars Digital Card Trader Collecting App from Topps is for you. Download the free app from iTunes or Google Play and collect your favorite images from the classic 1977 Star Wars cards to The Clone Wars, Star Wars Rebels, The Force Awakens, Rogue One, The Last Jedi, and much more. Collect and trade with friends new and old through the Star Wars Digital Card Trader Collecting app from Topps. These are the cards you're looking for. And if you're finding yourself thinking, how can I help Coffee with Kenobi out? I really like this show and I want to do my part. Well, we appreciate that and we appreciate you. And one of the ways you can do that is to be a CWK Patreon contributor. I want to give a very special shout out to Tyler Wiggins, Ben Elkington, Dennis Keithley, Terry Lee, Angela Souse, Aaron Harris, Mediocre Jedi, Connie Shee, BJ Smith, Christian Dale, Nick Deco, Adam Leonard, Jim Capron, Jason Hall, Mark Suter, Mike Audette, Eric Struthers, Jared Cantor, and Brian McKinney. The Patreon page is something that helps us out in a lot of ways, including producing our show and distributing it through the RSS feed, which is how you send your show to different podcast catchers like iTunes and Google Play, etc. It also helps with the equipment and the upkeep. If you contribute, because there are different levels you can contribute and there are different rewards that come with this, for $5 or more a month, you can get a special mention on the show like you just heard, and we will follow you on social media. And you also become a member of the CWK Discord community, which is basically a message board that's exclusive to just our CWK Patreon contributors. For $10 a month or more, you also have the same things I just mentioned. Plus, you can set up your own Discord text channels, and you get more insights and different access to different posts that we have. 35 more a month, 50 a month, and more. The contributions go on and on. But the more you contribute, the more opportunities you have. You can get coffee mugs, CWK t-shirts. You can also, by the way, get a chance to co-host a show with us, depending on how much you contribute. And be sure to check out our webpage and go to the Patreon page to see the incentives and see the opportunities for you. Because, as I mentioned, you can not only host the show with me, but you could do it one time, twice in 1 month, or you could do the entire month, all four shows with me in 1 month and another guest host. And that's really fun. One of the best things about the show is being able to meet and talk with and converse with each of you. And this is one way to guarantee that's going to happen. So be sure to check out our links on the webpage or the show notes for more information. Okay, we're back. And as I mentioned, we have the Webby winning deputy editor of BBC Culture and the author of Star Wars Made Easy. Christian, I was so excited when you first revealed that you had authored this book. I know what a big Star Wars fan you are and a man of words, and this must have been really thrilling. Tell us kind of how this book came out for you, how you were invited to it, the whole deal.
Oh, thank you so much. Well, it's so nice of you to say that. It has been such an honor being involved with this book. That I first was extended the opportunity last November by DK Books, and you know, I could say they had liked some of my Star Wars writing in the past, and so yeah, I ended up writing the whole thing in about 3 months, and it was such a fun fun experience actually writing it, putting it together, because it really forced me to look at the saga through the eyes of someone who's just being introduced to it. You know, it's like we all remember like how we were first exposed to Star Wars. You know, for me, it was really the first time I ever was aware of Star Wars at all was through the Star Tours ride at Disney's Hollywood Studios, then Disney's MGM Studios at Walt Disney World here in Florida. And I just thought it was such a cool thing that, you know, it kind of got into my blood, and I just wanted to, you know, see the movie that it was actually from. And, you know, a few days before my 10th birthday, I, you know, Blockbuster and rented a VHS copy of A New Hope, and, you know, nothing was ever the same after that. So, you know, you always remember, like, how you were introduced to Star Wars. And for me, you know, having been a fan now for a couple decades, it was just so much fun in writing this to think about, all right, so how would I explain certain concepts to someone who's just coming to Star Wars for the first time? You know, how would I explain how a lightsaber works, or how the Force works, or, you know, the difference between the light side and the dark side, let alone all the character relationships, you know, the Skywalker family tree, you know, who's related to whom, and all the different factions. And so it was such a unique experience to kind of like go back to square one almost. And at the same time, then for longtime fans, you know, I tried to inject a little bit of humor into it, some in jokes here and there that will, you know, be satisfying if you're someone who has been a fan for a long time as well. Of course, the target for Star Wars Made Easy are new fans, people who want to get caught up to speed in time for The Last Jedi. But I think there's a lot that long-time fans can really get off of it as well. So, yeah, I mean, it was such a fun process. I mean, it was just really, it was like 3 months of all-out writing. And, you know, and so we had most of it done by February, and then it's out 1st of September. So it was just so exciting. And now it's out there, and people have really been enjoying it. I'm thrilled. And the fact that you guys have already picked up your copies, that is just awesome.
Oh yeah, that's one of the perks, Chris, about the show is they sent me one about a week or two before it came out, so I was pretty lucky to dive in advance. Go ahead, Matt.
Well, Chris, Chris, my question for you, you know, because, you know, for people who are fairly new to Star Wars, you know, thankfully they get to avoid the debate of how you should watch the films and in which order. And I noticed that you did a great job of covering all the basics of everything before diving into Episode 4. And I was just curious, you know, was there a method to your madness in doing it sort of chronologically based on when the films came out, as opposed to, say, numerically based on the film, the order of the films?
Definitely. So we do have a page as well for how to watch films, you know, a few different orders that you can follow if you're watching the films for the first time. And so the structure of the book overall, it did make sense to us to follow release order, just because, and really when it comes down to it, I think I do have to recommend release order as the way to watch the films for the first time, because that really replicates the experience of fans who were there from the beginning. There's something so special about having that, of just being dropped into the middle of the story with Episode 4 and basically just kind of having to, you know, navigate your own way through that galaxy far, far away, you know, with that film. I mean, it's amazing how it just drops you into this propulsive story without giving you really much backstory at all in Episode 4. And then it just, with every film that it's been released since, it just deepens and new layers are added to it. And, you know, I think, I mean, I adore the prequels. My favorite Star Wars film overall actually is Revenge of the Sith. But I think that it is best to start with Episode 4, because then, you know, if you honestly don't know about the twist that the end of The Empire Strikes Back, you could have that experience, that amazing, like, oh my God moment. There, and then, you know, and then it's all kind of filled in, the backstory, just so brilliantly, I think, by the prequels after that. I think release order made the most sense for structuring the book itself. I mean, actually, the order of watching the films that I truly prefer is to start with Episode 4, then Episode 5, and then after the big reveal about Vader, going back to the prequels, watching 1, 2, 3, then Rogue One, because actually Rogue One links up just as beautifully with Revenge of the Sith as it does with A New Hope. And then after Rogue One, watching Return of the Jedi, and then the new films, the Force Awakens, and soon The Last Jedi. So, you know, it's like, I mean, obviously it's to each his or her own, but I think just if you want to have the experience of fans who've been, you know, following the saga for years or decades, I think it makes sense to watch it in release order.
Okay. Well, I'm sorry, Dan, go ahead. No, I was jumping on you.
No worries. I hadn't heard it explained quite that way. Of course, we are very familiar with the machete order, but then you throw Rogue One into the mix. As I introduce the films to my son, he's definitely going to get the release order experience. And tomorrow, actually, I'm starting a huge mythology unit on Star Wars with my high school students, and we're going to start with A New Hope and Empire, and then we're going to go to the prequels and then back to Return of the Jedi, because I feel like that's a bit more powerful for the type of analysis that we're going to do in the class. But Matt, what were you going to say?
That's awesome.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, clearly this, like you see, you know, I think, what was it? I had read somewhere that you had described it, or maybe it had been described as sort of Star Wars for Dummies, and that's not a bad thing, because I love the For Dummies books. They have taught me a lot of things, and I liked how you focused primarily on the films, you know, with mentions of some of the TV shows. But can you see yourself maybe coming back around with a Volume 2 to sort of, you know, tie some of the other media into it all together to almost to build on the universe? I don't want to say expanded universe, because then that opens up an entire can of worms.
Pandora.
But with the new novels, as you mentioned, you know, Chuck Wendig's Aftermath trilogy, and, you know, the Bloodlines, the upcoming stuff surrounding The Last Jedi, as well as the stuff that was involved, you know, in the lead up to The Force Awakens as well. I mean, do you think that would probably be fodder for a sequel?
Possibly. Yeah, no doubt. I mean, it's really, it's up to Lucasfilm and DK more than anything, but I'm certainly up for it. I'll put it that way. Yeah, I read everything that comes out, essentially. I'm deep right now into Claudia Gray's amazing first novel, Leia, Princess of Alderaan, which I'm loving and has so many bits of cool connective tissue, not only to The Last Jedi, but to the prequels and really all over the place. It's kind of amazing. There's so much great storytelling just in the books and in the comics that, you know, I think should be celebrated. And, you know, so yeah, I would love to see that, actually. I think that would be an amazing addition. And, you know, we upon the Clone Wars and Rebels, you know, in the book, but I think more to be done there as well, especially Rob.
Did you find it difficult having to sort of dance around, you know, with what you know and what we don't know and, you know, what the wider public is not yet aware of?
It was a delicate process for sure, but it was in some respects just advancing what we know about a few concepts just a little bit what had already been out there. So, for instance, in the entry on Porgs that you'll see in the Last Jedi section of the book, you know, we say adorable, absolutely, tasty, maybe. You know, so just the idea that they may be actually like a food source is, you know, something that I mean, actually some had speculated about, but hadn't really been confirmed in any way thus far. So my book kind of suggests that they may be a food source. They may be. So it was like, it's sort of like taking various elements of the film that were already out there and sort of just advancing them a little bit. There were a couple new additions though, that we had. We did introduce the space horses, the Fabios, which had been kind of mentioned actually in Aftermath Life Dad, but it was a little odd because actually they were spelled differently there. So in a way, this is like the first true sort of like canonical. Well, I mean, not believe me, everything in Life Dead is in canon. Those books are canon, but this was, you know, I'll mention that the Fabios were going to be a big part of Canto Bites and all of that. And I think my book was the first place where we called ATM-6, the Gorilla Walkers.
Yes, so, I think you're right.
You know, just yeah. So just a few things like that. Yeah, it was really fun. I mean, obviously, it's like the way we see this book and the whole journey to the Star Wars: The Last Jedi publishing program is that these are books, whether reference books like mine or novels like Claudia's book, Leia, Princess of Alderaan, is that these are books that have connective tissue to the new film, but won't spoil any story points from the film or give anything away, you know, and because, you know, you want to go into the film, you want to go in cold, you want to go in, you know, just fresh. So there's nothing spoilery, I would say, here. It just kind of makes you think about certain concepts that this film will present and maybe think about them in a new way, like that porgs may really be tasty.
Which I know makes Matt happy based on his hilarious tweets about said porg delicacies.
I know only one thing. Porgs are delicious.
Kentucky fried porgs. You never know. That's
never know.
You never know indeed. I did catch the joke in there in the book too. I thought that was pretty funny. Well, this hopefully shows everyone who hasn't picked it up yet, if there even is such a person that doesn't exist, that you feel free to go onto Amazon.com. We have an affiliate link on the show notes and the website to pick it up. Christian, thanks for sharing a little bit about that. It's definitely going to be worth chatting with you about this some more, because I want to have you on again just to talk about the research. I mean, talk about fun.
Oh, yeah, because it, you know, it's very scholarly. I mean, it's edifying, but it's also very entertaining.
Yes.
And if you're listening and you haven't, you've looked at it and thought, oh, well, I know everything there is to know. Well, guess what? There's stuff in there that you may not know. And it's an excellent read. It's an excellent primer for Star Wars. Even for old jaded people like myself, I really enjoyed going through the pages, and I think everybody else out there will too.
And I was just talking to
you. Thank you so much. Yeah, I mean, it was just such a fun process you know, writing this. And I mean, the design team at DK Books in the UK that, you know, actually came up with the visuals and all, I mean, just extraordinary. It was fun though, because they, you know, Lucasfilm allowed me to put so much of my voice into it. You know, it is my own kind of quirky sense of humor. It is very much my take on Star Wars as well. But I think at the same time, it's open enough, it's expansive enough that, you know, it's like, at the same time, even though this is kind of my take on Star Wars, it's like, you don't have to take my word for it. It's like, there's a lot there that I think is just kind of general knowledge that will really, be meaningful to new fans. But it was fun. You know, I had a magazine background. You know, I used to work in Entertainment Weekly. So, just being able to, you know, write to fit, like, in these little text boxes here and there on each page, and just know that, okay, you've got like 50 words right here and you cannot go over that at all and everything. And, you know, it's almost like, you know, doing a crossword puzzle or something. It's like, you have to figure out, how do I explain, you know, a lightsaber crystal in 40 words, you know, so, and what it does and everything. It's a unique challenge, but a lot of fun.
And the proof is definitely in the pages. As Matt said, it's entertaining and edifying as well. So, Christian, thanks for sharing a little bit about that.
My pleasure.
So we'll go ahead and take another break, and when we return, Tom will have the news. This is Coffee with Kenobi.
Greetings. This is Obi-Wan Kenobi, and you're listening to Coffee with Kenobi.
Looking to catch up on the latest Star Wars books? Try listening to them on audio, featuring sound effects, top-notch narrators, and music directly from the movies. Star Wars audiobooks are the definitive listening experience. From Han Solo to C-3PO to Admiral Akbar, you'll recognize all of your favorite characters. Listen to movie tie-ins like Rogue One and The Force Awakens, to book titles such as Phasma and Battlefront II Inferno Squad, to classic audiobooks like William Shakespeare's Star Wars. With Star Wars audiobooks, you'll have plenty of Star Wars listening to keep you entertained. Visit penguinrandomhouseaudio.com/Star Wars for sample clips and to start listening now.
The Star Wars Digital Card Trader collecting app features incredible images from many aspects of the saga, including the original trilogy, the prequels, The Clone Wars, Rebels, The Force Awakens, and Rogue One. It's the quality you have come to expect from Topps. It's also easy to get into and really fun, too. Your favorite Star Wars characters, scenes, and moments are in every pack. To get started, download the app for free from iTunes or Google Play, and then be sure to open the app each day for free credits to spend on card packs from the Cantina. Plus, if you can't get what you're looking for, there's a place to trade with your friends as you complete your Star Wars collection. And if you're an experienced collector, there are exclusive cards, special inserts, and autograph opportunities for you to enjoy. Don't worry about missing the cards and sets you want either, as you can sign up for notifications right on the app. The Star Wars Digital Card Trader collecting app from Topps can be downloaded for free from iTunes or Google Play. Be sure to download the app and start your collection today. The Star Wars Digital Card Trader collecting app from Topps is available now. And remember, these are the cards you're looking for.
We're back, and it is news time.
Yes. Well, the Wall Street Journal reports this week that negotiations between the nation's theaters and Walt Disney Company show that Disney has an unprecedented power in making demands to screen Star Wars: The Last Jedi. Some demands are that Disney will receive 65% of ticket sales revenue, which sets a new benchmark that is normally around 55%. It is also reported that Disney is requiring theaters to screen The Last Jedi in the largest auditorium for at least 4 weeks. The penalty for not meeting the conditions is the studio will receive an additional 5% revenue from the theater not in compliance. These conditions will take effect when the film reaches $500 million in sales and is expected, seeming that the Star Wars The Force Awakens collected $937 million. Mid to large market moviegoers won't probably see much effect by the demands on theaters. However, rural America, small town theaters that have one or two movie screens may be the most affected. The article reports that Lee Aiken, who runs a one-screen theater in Elkader, Iowa, reports that there's a finite number of moviegoers in his market, and he can service them all in a couple of weeks. And at the end of a month-long run, the film will be playing to near-empty auditoriums at a 65% ticket payout to Disney. Now, movie house executives have been frustrated coming off summer movie revenues at about a 5% decline, but are promising investors that The Last Jedi will help balance out a summer of duds.
Wow, that's a lot to take in. And when you mentioned the rural aspect of it, and that, ooh, this is tough. What do you guys think about this?
I'm a little bit torn on this because, yeah, you know, I realize that The Last Jedi is going to be a box office juggernaut for the first couple of weeks or so, perhaps even through the end of the year, of the calendar year. But you know, at the same time, as Eric wrote, and I know Eric, he's a good guy, as he wrote for his article for the Journal, it can be vexing for those smaller theaters because there are, believe it or not, in this day and age, there are towns in this country where there are no multiplexes, you know, where there's maybe one or two screens only. And that's going to be troublesome for people. I mean, you know, they don't draw that big of a crowd, you know, in that big of a sort of radius. And at some point, you know, they're going to stop going, you know, because granted, the tickets are a lot cheaper than, say, what you would pay in an urban environment for a multiplex theater. But at the same time, you know, there is a little thing, you know, people do want some sort of choice. But at the same time, you know, I have to, I can see why Disney is doing this because this is the bottom line. And, you know, 2017 has, for lack of, lack of a better term, been a creptacular year for cinema, at least when it comes to box office. You know, there have been a lot more duds than there have been hits. You know, thank goodness for great films like Wonder Woman, that being an exception. But it is kind of onerous, but at the same time, it's, you know, are you going to deny it? No, because, you know, if you're not going to show The Last Jedi, you're going to be losing out on a lot of money and, more importantly, on a lot of concession sales.
That's right. A lot of popcorn to be eaten.
I imagine the distributors are going to be, you know, working overtime to provide all that that syrup and popcorn and oil.
Well, there's a like you said, there's a part of me that's a little it's a little possibly disturbing in a way. Maybe disturbing is too harsh of a word, but certainly alarming. Christian, do you think this is going to be a trend? I mean, not everybody has the box office power that the juggernaut of the Disney Lucasfilm combo is, but this is something to be on the watch for.
It's really interesting. I mean, the fact is, really, I can't think of any other brand right now that has that level of clout to actually say we have to be on your largest screen for 4 weeks straight, other than Star Wars. I mean, as big as Marvel is, I don't think Marvel could say that. I think part of it also with Star Wars too, I mean, not only is it just such a, you know, such a phenomenon, I mean, Force Awakens being the highest grossing film domestically in American history. It's also that coming out when these films do, you know, at the end of the year, going into January, there really won't be that much competition. So what exactly would kick Star Wars off that screen? You know, that's, I'm not really certain what that would be. Obviously, yeah, I mean, if we are just talking about a one screen cinema, it could be problematic, you know, if nothing else is allowed to screen there. But the thing is, you know, if we're talking about, you know, smaller movies or, you know, Oscar fair that's going up against Star Wars, if we're talking about something like Steven Spielberg's The Post, say, about the Pentagon Papers scandal, you know, that's something like, you know, that could probably play more really at an art cinema, if there really is just like a theater, you know, for theaters here and there that just have, you know, one screen available. I feel like that probably, you know, it would still make a lot more sense for a cinema to say, no, yeah, we will screen The Last Jedi for 4 weeks. I think that the timing of this really helps a lot. I think if it were coming out, say, when Thor Ragnarok is coming out, like this weekend, it would be a lot harder to say that they can't show anything else for 4 weeks. But yeah, so it's just this combination of, the timing, and then the fact that it's Star Wars. I mean, Star Wars is the biggest game in town, no question about it. There's nothing else that can compete and nothing else that could really demand anything like this. So I don't really see it being the start of any trend either. I think that this is kind of a one-off. This is an exceptional case.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. It will certainly be interesting to see how it plays out. Tom, what else is going on?
Well, StarWars.com reports that ILM Lab and Lucasfilm have announced a new virtual reality experience, Star Wars Droid Repair Bay, Astromechanic for the Resistance. In this new VR immersive game, participants are an astromech repair technician on General Organa's ship, and using their own movements will repair BB-8 and his friends. As the official VR experience of Star Wars The Last Jedi, we will be introduced to new astromechs along with their unique personalities and original designs.
Where will people be able to experience? Is it just something you can go and purchase, or is it Disney, or where will it be?
Well, according to StarWars.com, the experience is powered by Nissan and will be coming soon to dealerships in the U.S., Mexico, and Canada, and it's designed for HTC Vive and Samsung Gear.
Huh. So it could be as simple as just another way for people to go and test drive a vehicle?
Kind of sounds like that, yeah.
I mean, I think I would do this. I mean, that would be a good reason to go check out a car, but what do you guys think?
ILM X Lab, you know, has done so many cool VR experiences like this. At Sundance a couple years ago, they had an installation where you could go in and just like put on these glasses and they have this amazing, you know, 360-degree virtual Jakku environment. Like you're actually on the sands of Jakku, like walking around, you know, the Starship graveyard from the battle. And it was almost like, you know, I mean, mixing franchises here, but it was almost like Star Trek's holodeck in a way. It was just so immersive and so cool. I can only imagine that something like this, then if you add like, you know, some character to it, you have, you know, a bunch of different assets that you can interact with, really would be awesome.
I think this is indicative of where filmmaking and entertainment is going. You know, where you cross-see these platforms. You can go to the cinema to see something on the big screen. Then you can strap on your virtual reality head deck and experience it as if you were literally there. You know, it's not quite, you know, the holodeck from Star Trek. I crossed the streams. I had to, sorry. But, you know, I do think it's just sort of those furtive baby steps toward it. And I can fundamentally see, you know, in 50 years, you know, going to the cinema to see a movie will be considered quaint, and you know, and be, you know, like, you know, your grandchildren will be looking at you, Dan, going, so wait, you actually went and you stood in line and you watched something in 2D on a wall. You mean it's not like it's, you know, and it's not like we do it now where we just, you know, it just pops up and surrounds us in the living room. So
I could say, yeah, I went uphill and it was snowing.
Exactly. Inside the theater because there was no roof.
That's right. But we were thankful.
Well, let me piggyback another story that goes kind of along the same lines, except from virtual reality to augmented reality with Star Wars Jedi Challenges. And it's going to be released this Friday, November 3rd. Your purchase for $199.99 gets you a lightsaber controller, a Lenovo Mirage AR headset, and a tracking beacon, all to make the accuracy and clarity of the experience better. According to the Lenovo website, Star Wars Jedi Challenges has three play modes. One where you have lightsaber battles with characters such as Kylo Ren and Darth Vader, among others. The second play mode is a strategic combat where you get to command the rebel army against the Empire in a large-scale kind of holographic ground war. And the third is holo chess, where you get to direct your holographic alien pieces and you can say to yourself, let the Wookiee win, and then actually do it.
Wow. You know, there's two things I'm sure of when I hear this. One, I think it's safe to say that just about every Star Wars fan would love to get their hands on this. And two, when I do get to play it, I'm sure I'll end up with a concussion because I'll probably run into a wall doing it.
I have no comment as I am actively refreshing the Lenovo website for the next 2 days.
Same here,
for,
pretty
for
much.
Reasons.
Yeah, it'd be good if, right. if we have like carpeted walls or something to make certain that we actually can avoid injury as much as possible.
A new NFL helmet design maybe will go into play here.
Yes.
It does look fun, though. And I was thinking the same thing as I was watching the video trailer or the promo video for it. They have lots of space to maneuver in that video. And I think about, like, I would be probably designated to play this in my office, and there's not a lot of room to move. So, yeah, it would have to be a careful play for sure. Well, how about we finish with one more thing? Knowing our affinity for Porgs on this show, did you catch on the Star Wars show this week that in an interview with Andy Gutierrez, Kathleen Kennedy revealed that there is a scene shot that has a baby Porg?
Is it like an appetizer? Or?
It is. You put them on a stick.
Oh, man.
Does this mean there will be
that Porg-alicious.
Are there pork diapers for the pork babies?
I do not know. This is, she didn't say anything about that.
Should have asked Kathleen Kennedy that. That's important. Well, Christian, is there a part of your book with the index that talks about baby porgs?
I'm afraid we're going to save that for the second edition. That feels like that's something that only once the Last Jedi is out can we really talk about that.
Right,
Christian is furiously scribbling down an outline for Volume 2 right now, Revenge of the Porgs.
I know. Exactly. All right, so we need at least 2 pages on baby porgs. You know, what's the cleanup involved with them? Do they wear diapers? You know,
at least a double truck baby? Spread. At least a double truck spread and put it on the cover.
At least. Yeah.
Yeah. Look forward to that.
Are they hatched? Are there live births? These are all important questions.
Oh, I believe we've already learned. I believe we've already learned that answer. If you watch the excellent Ridley Scott film Alien, you'll see how baby porgs are brought into this world.
There you go.
No, I am now told that those are xenomorphs, not porgs. I apologize. Yes.
Well, Tom, thank you for an interesting way to close it out. And when I saw that thing about the baby porgs, I thought, oh, here we go. This is going to be between that and the Loath Cats on the most recent episodes of Rebels. We're going to have all kinds of cute going on for Star Wars.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Well, thank you, as always, for bringing us the news. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, I will have part 2 of my conversation with horror director Mark Pavia. This is Coffee with Kenobi.
Coffee, tea, or me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. It's Coffee with Kenobi.
Coffee with Kenobi was sponsored by Penguin Random House Audio. Looking to catch up on the latest Star Wars books? Try listening to them on audio. Featuring sound effects and music directly from the movies, Star Wars audiobooks are the definitive listening experience. From brand new audiobooks such as Phasma and Battlefront 2 Inferno Squad to our blockbuster movie tie-in editions, you'll have plenty to keep you entertained. Visit penguinrandomhouseaudio.com/Star Wars for sample clips and to start listening now. Coffee with Kenobi was also sponsored by the Star Wars Digital Card Trader Collecting App from Topps. If you love Star Wars and love the excitement of chasing your favorite Star Wars collectibles, the Star Wars Digital Card Trader Collecting App from Topps is for you. Download the free app from iTunes or Google Play and collect your favorite images from the classic 1977 Star Wars cards to the Clone Wars, Star Wars Rebels, The Force Awakens, Rogue One, and now The Last Jedi. Collect and trade with friends new and old through the Star Wars Digital Card Trader Collecting app from Topps. These are the cards you're looking for. For today's coffee chat, we will first share with you part 2 of our exclusive interview with horror director Mark Pavia and the influence that George Lucas and Steven Spielberg have had not only on him, but on filmmaking and culture in general. I would be remiss if I didn't ask you about horror and what kind of elements of horror do you see in Star Wars? And
well,
don't
obviously
say Jar Jar.
No, I won't. I promise. Well, obviously, it's Darth Vader, right? Especially when you're a kid.
Yeah.
You know, I was just watching the film the other night, and what was breathtaking about his entrance, right? His entrance in the original movie. Yeah. Yeah, what's really fascinating, and this was the set design, was everything about the Rebel cruiser, everything's white, right? Like right. The hallways, everything's white. Even the stormtroopers' outfits are white. And in steps, this guy, or this, you know, half man, half machine, you know, completely in black. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I remember the first time I saw that, it was horrific. He terrified me. And they even took it a step further. Like in Empire Strikes Back, which was so gorgeous the way that was shot. You know what I mean? Like, it was so cinematic. You know, there's a beautiful simplicity to Star Wars, you know, the original Star Wars, or a New Hope, you know what I mean?
Sure.
I remember when that happened. I remember when they...
1981.
Yeah, I was like, what? It's called Star Wars. No, it's called Star Wars, A New Hope. Yeah. Okay. All right.
I'm with you.
Yeah, I was like, it's... Oh, whatever. So, but Darth Vader in Empire Strikes Back is terrifying, especially, you know, in when he's fighting Luke in Cloud City, you know, like when he pops out, you know, like I literally jumped in my seat. So as far as horror, you know, the dark side, you know what I mean? The dark side of the Force was, and then the Emperor in Return of the Jedi was horrific, but I loved all that stuff. I had all the, like, the little the Emperor dolls and little statues, you know, from, and you're going to say, do you still have them? No. I don't. I really don't. But I wish I had all that stuff. But I remember I was so happy. I'm not sure what year. I guess it was in the early 80s. I finally got a Darth Vader helmet. You know, like one of the masks, one of the actual masks. You know, it came in two pieces and it Velcroed, you know, like on the top of the helmet Velcroed down onto the front part of the mask.
My 4-year-old has a Stormtrooper one that's like that now.
Yeah, I mean, this was like, I couldn't believe it. So I just kind of walked around the house in my Darth Vader helmet. Even to the point, you'll laugh at this. Okay, so I love Star Wars, can't wait for the sequel. Empire Strikes Back comes out in May of 1980. And now I'm what, 15 years old. So I'm standing in line with my two best buddies, Ken Zersky and Randy Whalen. And my dad's there again. You know, he's taking me, there's a huge line wrapping around the building. And we're there for like the second show. And I'm waiting there, and I can't even believe what I'm about to see. I'm like, oh, my God, I've been waiting forever to see this movie. And out comes the let's say we're going into the 2 o'clock show. So out comes the 11:30 a.m. show.
Oh, no. Let's go.
And they're walking by, and this kid's like, I can't believe it. I cannot believe. Spoiler alert, if you don't know this. everybody knows. I can't believe Vader's Luke's father. This happened. And I looked at Ken and Randy, they didn't hear him. I looked at my dad, he didn't hear it. I was the only one who heard it.
Oh, believe it?
Yeah, I swear to God that happened.
How did that impact the movie for you?
I was just so into the movie that I just, I forgot about it until the exact moment. You know what I mean? So right. I still got the, but it was kind of cool in a weird, messed up way that I kind of knew the secret. I got to wait and experience the audience gasping, which they literally gasped.
Well, I remember thinking that Darth Vader was lying, and it took me months to finally understand that he was telling the truth.
Yeah, and in those great shots, especially at the end of Empire, where he's looking down at his hand, you know, his mechanical hand, Luke Skywalker is looking down at his mechanical hand, and you flash in your mind, you know, that's the same as he's turning into his father.
Right.
You know, he's turning into a machine. And the reason you know it's not a lie is because remember he's sleeping on the ship at the end?
Right.
And Vader calls him and he sits up and says, Father. You know what I mean? So I was like, oh my God, it's true. You know what I mean? This is real. And then it's confirmed in Jedi, you know?
Yeah.
But, and so for Jedi in 83, I went with all my friends, the same group of friends, but it expanded. We all dressed up as characters. I went in my Darth Vader helmet with a cape and all that stuff. I was actually at, did you do this? Dan, did you go to, in 1980, was it 85? Where Lucasfilm finally showed the trilogy in one, they only in like 5 or 6 cities or something like that?
No, I didn't do that. Had I known, I would have done it for sure.
Yeah, so you should look this up later, but I think it was 85 where they did all three movies And then a representative from Lucasfilm, if I remember correctly, came down to the front of the theater and said, everybody wave, George wants a picture of all you guys. So they had a professional photographer come in and take pictures of all of us going crazy and waving our hands, you know.
Awesome.
So we watched the all three movies together, you know, a triple feature anyway.
That must have been that must have been amazing. So you obviously love the original trilogy. I do as well.
Yes.
But let's look at the prequels briefly. I mean, Darth Maul, I don't know that he's this generation's Darth Vader. Maybe Kylo Ren would be that more so.
Yeah, probably Kylo Ren, yeah.
But how do you weigh Darth Maul and Kylo Ren and kind of their impact on the horror elements?
I think you're right. I mean, I liked his makeup in the prequels.
Oh, me too.
Yeah, there were some people who kind of, you know, came down on that a little bit, but I actually liked it. And his theme was, you know, that score with John Williams. You know, what can we say about John Williams?
Right.
But as far as, you know, Kylo Ren in Force Awakens, I mean, the way that, you know, J.J. portrayed him, it was terrifying. You know what I mean? Like, it was – I actually thought – it's interesting. I want to get your take on this. I'm not sure if I would have taken his helmet, his mask off so soon.
No, I agree.
Ah, yes. You see? I thought when I was watching it, I was like, don't humanize him yet. You know what I mean? You know, I was like, keep him hidden. That's just, I'm not telling JJ's a genius, but, you know, I don't think I would have taken that helmet off so quick.
Well, in all the clips we've seen of The Last Jedi, it almost seems more like Kylo Ren is not wearing the mask as much, which I think might be a disaster marketing-wise, but we'll see.
Yeah.
And it almost seems like he's so comfortable being who he is now or who he thinks he is that he doesn't need a mask. Maybe the guy's one underneath.
Right. If I was making that movie, if I was directing those films, I would say he has to keep the mask. You know what I mean? Like, he's hiding behind it. Once you remove the mask, your humanity comes out. Right? I can look in your eyes. I can reason with you. I could tear up. I could see if you're going to tear up, you know, this sort of thing.
Right.
But he has no empathy. But with the mask, you can hide behind the mask. And I find that much more interesting. You don't want to see Michael Myers without his mask, right?
No, no.
Right. I mean, even though we see it briefly in John Carpenter's masterpiece, you know, he puts it right back on. Right? You know, remember that when Jamie Lee Curtis tears the mask off at the end of Halloween? You know, and you see he's like blonde hair and kind of like a regular guy. And you're like, wow, that's not so scary. And then he puts the mask back on and he's terrifying instantly. So that same sort of thinking in my mind goes with the Star Wars villains. Don't take the mask off. Look at it in Jedi, in Return of the Jedi. It's only at the last moment where Vader's like, let me see you with my own eyes, to his son, and they remove, and then you have that kind of egghead thing going on, you know?
Right.
You know what I mean? So I thought they might have, you know, gone a little too early on that. But like, you asked me the terror aspect. I find them very frightening. I'm sure children, right? Like, our 12-year-old selves would be mortified by the imagery.
Well, and Adam Driver's voice last summer when I was in L.A., my wife and I went to Disneyland for the day, and in the Star Wars launch bay, they have a place where you can get your picture with Kylo Ren, and the way it's set up, I don't know if you've been there, but you get going down this hallway, and you don't see him, and all of a sudden they say, Kylo Ren is ready for you, and you turn around, and there's this amazing lifelike costume of Kylo Ren. And the voice coming out of it is Adam Driver's voice. He recorded lines for it. And he was pacing in front of me, looking at me. And I remember thinking, okay, this is scary. This is legitimately scary. And I told my wife, and she goes, you know that's fake, right? And I said, of course I know it's fake. You had to be there. You would not believe how intimidating it is.
Adam Driver is such an amazing actor.
Yes.
So, you know, we were talking earlier about like the mask and not to remove the mask, but that's not to say that he's a brilliant actor. You know what I mean? So when the mask does come off, and that's probably why JJ made that decision, because he had such an amazing actor working for him and with him, you know what I mean? That he wanted to highlight his face. Right. That's probably why he did it. I bet you that's why he did it.
Oh, it makes sense. It makes sense. Well, Mark, it has been wonderful speaking with you. Can you tell us kind of where can people reach out to you if they want to ask you a question or just say hello and let us know what you're working on these days?
Yeah, I'm on, you can find me on Facebook. You know, you can just look up Mark Pavia, Los Angeles director, blah, 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 my Facebook page. So come say hi there. What would I have been working on? Oh, my last film I just finished, it came out last year, is a horror movie called Fender Bender. It's about a guy who, it's an homage to the horror movies of the 80s. You know what I mean? Classic horror movies of the 80s. Mm-hmm. That was put out by Shout Factory / Scream Factory. It's about a guy who hits you in your car on purpose. Then you exchange all the information, and now he knows where you live, and he comes and kills you at night, dressed up in a crazy, scary outfit. So that's what Fender is about. So that was my last film. And right now, I just wrote a new script called Hollywood Psycho, which is about an actor, a deranged actor, who so desperately needs to be famous, he resorts to murder to get into the headlines. So that's what that's about. So that's out to studios right now. And another script that's out right now. Oh, you'll like this. I'm actually trying to get this script to Spielberg. So if our friends from Amblin are listening, because I know that they do listen to your podcast, it's actually called Dark Park. It's actually almost like a horror version of Jurassic Park.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, it's like a horror amusement park that comes to life. You know, a horror carnival / amusement park appears in a Midwest town mysteriously on the eve of Halloween, and a local cop sheriff has to figure out why is this happening? How did this happen? It's actually scary stuff.
So. That sounds awesome. That sounds yeah. really awesome.
Yeah, thanks. So we're out, you know, we're out with these projects, and it's good, exciting things are happening. So thanks for asking.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you for having a cup of coffee with us. You're welcome anytime.
Thank you so much.
For the second half of our coffee chat, it's time to finish our CWK book study of Leia, Princess of Alderaan, a book I've really enjoyed reading and discussing with each of you through the past few weeks. Basically, the end goes pretty quickly. There's this wonderfully powerful and dramatic scene where Leia goes back to the scene of where she knows the rebellion ships are, the army is waiting, the armada that is trying to grow. When she gets there, because she goes there to warn them, and when she's able to get them to leave, and she warns her father, and it's neat seeing the recognition the two share that this means Leia is capable, is aware, and it's unavoidable. She has to be a part of this, and she's talented enough and brave enough that it's no longer become something that he necessarily worries about her like he did before. He knows that's just part of where they're at in the galaxy, and they embrace it. And it's a really nice moment, a really nice section. However, it's not without its loss. Kier has followed Leia, and we come to find out that the reason he's following her, besides caring about her, and truly he does, but his plan seems to be that he's going to turn them over to the Empire, and he believes he's doing this to save Alderaan and save Leia and her family. Of course, Leia knows, and we know, that's not what would happen, but he doesn't really get the chance to find out, because when the rebels escape, they set off a contingency plan where they create a self-destruct, and when that happens, it ends up damaging Kier's ship, and Leia realizes he's in danger, and Kier realizes it, but it's too late. She's able to go over to the ship and basically say goodbye to him. It's a very, very powerful scene where there's zero gravity, because that helps her to dock with the damaged ship. And she says her goodbyes to him, and they describe her feeling basically his chest and feeling his heartbeat start to fade away. And she's absolutely devastated. And we see through the rest of the book, although there's not much left in the book, how much it's impacted her. And there's a lot said about how she plans on dealing with loss and suffering in the future. And really, that's about the only explanation we have for why she handles Alderaan the way she does, besides the Leia book issue number 1 by Mark Waid a few years ago. It helps to digest kind of how that all happens. And really, I think if they would remake A New Hope, Leia's loss and her the impact on her on screen would probably be much, much, much greater. But obviously they were telling a different story then. But this shows, if you try to make it retroactively fit, this shows why Leia handled it with the power and the dignity that she did. But it was not easy. She is very defiant in a very calm, austere way that I find wonderful, and just shows you kind of what Leia is about. But I want to read the last two lines of the book. "My parents," Leia thought, "my friends, my world. These are the things the Empire can never take away." Oof, that's a very powerful ending, because we know this is a huge use of dramatic irony, because we know that the Empire is going to do just that, at least to her family she grew up with. Obviously, she has her surrogate family that takes on a whole new life with Luke Skywalker and Han Solo. But there we go. There's our very first ever CWK book study on Leia, Princess of Alderaan. I'm glad that was the first book. A really nice book that's sort of a snapshot into Leia growing into the princess she will become and the general she will eventually become, showing how she deals with real loss and finding out that her parents are so heavily involved with what's going on with the rebellion, which she had no idea was even a thing until the events of this book. It's very powerful, especially if you're a fan of Leia, and Claudia Gray really is on the pulse of what makes that character tick. So now we're on the second CWK book study. We'll be finished with Phasma, which is the book we're going to discuss chapters 1 through 4 of right now. We'll be finished with this right before The Last Jedi. So let's get right to it. The opening, we meet a character named V. Moradi, and she is apparently the character through which, or the lens through which, we're going to learn about what's going on in this book. Leia refers to her as Starling, and they have a little bit of a conversation. V is a spy that Leia trusts, and she says, "Look, a lot of pilots have been disappearing because of the First Order. So when you come back to base, I want you to be really, really careful." And she says, I will. And as soon as she comes out of hyperspace, meaning V, there's this resurgent class Star Destroyer that captures her right out of hyperspace. And really, without delay, she is captured by an army of stormtroopers and a red armored stormtrooper who is very, very vicious. He takes her through a series of corridors and tunnels to a room where she's going to be tortured. And she knows this, but she's been trained to resist torture. She's not easily intimidated. And she knows it's going to be awful, but she doesn't really say, "I feel confident," and you feel her fear. But she's ready for anything, or so she thinks. And she's asked, "What do you know about Phasma?" And she pretends to not know anything. She's a spy. She's good at it. But her capturer is not going to fall for that. And he says, he basically doesn't say anything. He just shocks her. He puts something by her spine that shocks her. And the description is very powerful. You hot burning through her head, and her teeth are gnashing together so much so that she doesn't even realize it. And it's just really affecting her. It's terrible. Torture is always awful. And you can tell that she's hurt. And she's bleeding, and they make a comment that her blood is not the same color as her torturer's red boot. And she says that General Hux probably would be disappointed by that. General Hux's reputation precedes him for sure. Siv says that she will talk about Phasma, and they go back to the planet of Parnassus, Parnassos, and this is apparently where V was and why they think that she knows about Phasma. And there's this really, really quick scene. What I like about Phasma already, I like the voice and I like how this book is written. It's really, really neat. And it's also very, very quick and immediate and powerful, like I envision Phasma to be. So this section and all these chapters seem to be really, really short, which I like. I think it's easier to move through the book more quickly when that happens. But the first three chapters of the book, all the chapters are the same. They basically, as far as the titles of each chapter, the first three say on the absolution, and the fourth one tells us that it is 12 years ago on Parnassus. We meet the character of Siv, who V apparently has gotten her information about Phasma from, and it's this really quick, very primal, primitive story about, well, basically Phasma's people, although we don't know at the beginning. Egil, E-G-I-L, is the leader of the Sire, S-C-Y-R-E, and this is the people that Siv is a part of. Egil is stabbed. Apparently Egil is old for their people. He's in his 40s, yikes. But he's stabbed because he's, according to Por, P-O-R-R, this is not effective leadership, and he's going to take over. Now, Siv is supposed to bring him some extractors. They have this interesting ceremony that they do where they extract the essence, basically, of the person who's passed away. A little unclear, but basically they use the essence of the people to, as like a balm or a salve for other people who have survived, and it helps their skin, protects them from the sun. So it's almost like the circle of life being played out very much in ashen ways. But Siv refuses, and then there's another guy shows up named Keldo. He apparently lost part of his leg, and so he was a great warrior, and he still is, but he's now known and more revered for his wisdom. Por laughs at Keldo and basically says, "You're not going to stop me." And then this great WWE moment, Phasma steps out, and she is Keldo's sister, and she says, "I'll stop you." And they have this fight, and Phasma very much seems like she's in control. Phasma very much toys with Por as she's fighting him. But that's so that the other characters in the Sire can... They cut his tendons from behind, so he's basically ineffective. And Phasma says, "No, Keldo and I are going to be leaders, not you. And if you have the book handy and you're not driving, I'd like you to turn it to page 25. It's this great little section here talking about Phasma and basically how she is with her people. Phasma taught her warriors personally, sparring with them daily and challenging them to learn every weapon and remain constantly vigilant. They followed her not because she asked them to, but because she had... They followed her not because she asked them to, but because she had her own gravity, a greatness and courage that spoke to their hearts." I really like that, too. Phasma has always been such an enigma. And I gotta be honest, just the first four chapters alone, I already like Phasma much, much more than I did from the movie, and even the comic series that has just finished, because there's just an explanation for basically the reputation she has. I feel like she's already earned it just through these few chapters alone. And I can't wait to see what's going to happen. There's obviously going to be some back and forth between V being tortured and then what happens with Phasma's past. So that is it for chapters 1-4 of Phasma. For our next show, please read chapters 5-11 of Phasma by Delilah S. Dawson, and email and let me know what you think about this book so far. We do have one email that I wanted to share from our great friend Dave Motters. And Dave writes, "Stan, I just want to let you know that I will be the Padawan to your Jedi Master as you go through the Phasma book study. I've already read the first 6 chapters and am really enjoying the book. I was in the middle of reading From a Certain Point of View and started reading Phasma as well. Now I'm hooked on 2 books. This is a great lead up to The Last Jedi. Looking forward to your thoughts and comments." Well, David, I definitely agree. I'm definitely also trying to weigh what I want to do with From a Certain Point of View, because we're not going to do a book study with that one per se. But I am open to any ideas or suggestions that you might have, because that's a great book that is worth diving into as well. So enjoy Phasma, and feel free to email me with your thoughts, comments, and questions, and I'll be happy to share them on the next show.
Listening to Coffee with Kenobi, you are the podcast you're looking for. This is...
Before we get to email, I want to thank our CWK sponsors, Penguin Random House Audio, and the Star Wars Digital Card Trader Collecting App from Topps. Please support them the way they support our podcast. And remember to listen to new and archived shows of Coffee with Kenobi wherever you listen to podcasts, including iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, iHeartRadio, YouTube, Player FM, our Coffee with Kenobi website, www.coffeewithkenobi.com, or wherever you enjoy listening to your favorite shows. And if you listen to the show through iTunes, please leave us a review. We are also on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Pinterest, and Tumblr, and would love for you to check us out there. Be sure to listen to our CWK family of shows too, including Legends Library, Rebels Reactions, Comics with Kenobi, and Lattes with Leia. A big thank you to Christian Blauvelt and Matt Moore for joining us today. Where can listeners get in touch with either of you if they want to ask you a question or just say hello? And definitely let us know where we can find your book.
Yeah, absolutely. You can follow me on Twitter at CT Blauvelt. So that's CTBLAUV as in Victor, ELT as in Tom, CT Blauvelt. And yeah, you can pick up my book, Star Wars Made Easy, wherever books are sold, including online at Amazon, BarnesandNoble.com, wherever. And of course, as you mentioned earlier, I'm the deputy editor of BBC Culture, which you can find at bbc.com/culture. And as you mentioned earlier as well, we won the Webby earlier this year for Best Cultural Website. So yeah, please give us a look at BBC Culture. We've got over 1.2 million Facebook followers now, which is amazing. We just launched like a little over 4 years ago. So it's pretty cool how we've grown. But yeah, no, I love what you guys are doing on the show, and I look forward to the next time.
Well, thank you. Thank you. And congratulations again on that amazing Webby.
Thank you.
And Matt, what about you?
Well, you can find me writing about comics for Coffee with Kenobi at coffeewithkenobi.com. You can also hear me talking about Star Wars comics at Comics with Kenobi, which is the monthly podcast that's part of the Coffee with Kenobi family of podcasts. And you can follow us on Twitter at Comics with Kenobi. And there's no I in the with, much like Coffee with Kenobi. It's WTH. Thanks, Twitter. And then, of course, you can follow me on the Twitter at your own risk or at your leisure at Gorilla Scribe. And that's spelled the classically correct way, which is GUERRILLASCRIBE. And I have no books.
Yet.
Except for the ones in my library.
That's right. Which is bountiful. And I want to thank...
Which also includes Christian's copy.
That's right.
Not his personal copy. The copy of
as
his
far as
that
he
I purchased.
Knows, right?
As far as I know, yeah.
And I also want to thank each and every one of you for listening to and supporting Coffee with Kenobi and for contributing to Star Wars Conversation. I am off to Lucasfilm and Rancho Obi-Wan, but we'll be back next week with two new co-hosts and more Star Wars talk. And if you are participating in our CWK book study, be sure to read Phasma chapters 5 to 11 for next week. This is the podcast you're looking for.
This podcast is not endorsed by the Walt Disney Company or Lucasfilm Limited. It is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only. The official Star Wars website can be found at www.starwars.com. Star Wars, all names, sounds, and any other Star Wars related items are registered trademarks and or copyrights of Disney and their respective trademark and copyright holders. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Coffee with Kenobi unless otherwise indicated.
This is the podcast you're looking for.
There's no one here.